Hello.
Hello.
Hey, there he
hey.
Is.
Hey.
They let anybody in here, huh?
Finger guns. Pew, pew, pew.
Pew, pew, pew. You got to do your old white guy to barbecue cliches.
Hmm. Is that what one does at a barbecue?
I don't know. I don't get invited to barbecues.
Me neither.
Everyone in my neighborhood is in their 50s or 60s.
If I was invited to a barbecue, I would politely decline.
Of course you would.
Yeah.
Because you don't like the way people grill their hot dogs? Or they use the wrong types of buns on things?
No, just too many people.
I don't know that many people. Sometimes backyard barbecue is like 10 people at most.
Nope. Okay, let me explain how this works.
Is there a correct amount of people where it's like, it's not too many people, so it's overwhelming, and it's not too few people where the attention is all on you?
Yes, but here's the thing. Mm. The correct number of people for any social engagement is 4, including myself.
4?
Yes.
That feels and awfully intimate.
Well, this is the thing. Everybody's got something to talk about, and when everybody gets bored, everybody can agree to leave. And nobody has to pretend to be interested or stand off to the side awkwardly because everybody else is still having fun. Splitting checks isn't weird. You don't have to deal with any of that stuff. Nobody's like worried about like who's going to get a ride with who, and you're not like taking some stranger somewhere. None of that stuff happens.
Okay, avoiding for the moment that it sounds like you developed these rules in college and not as a 40-year-old man, you've clearly thought about this a lot, like a lot.
Yes.
And these are very, like, have you etched these rules into stone somewhere? It sounds like you these are like Joe Steele's rules to live and die by.
No, I mean, I have very strong opinions about that. I am... people might not know this, but I'm very introverted, despite having done 300 something episodes of a podcast. A podcast is easy because you just talk to somebody over the internet. But if you're in a social gathering with people and you have to make small talk, or worse, someone knows more about you than you know about them, or vice versa, then you don't really know what to do, and it can become awkward after a long period of time. So I do not enjoy that, and it makes me incredibly anxious. So
small talk is generally about, you know, work related things or just like life, I guess. But do you find that the work makes it difficult? Because I basically refuse to make small talk about my work because nobody understands the words that are coming out of my mouth, generally speaking.
Well, it's difficult because everybody wants to talk about everybody is defined by their jobs when you're our age. Nobody's really defined by their hobbies as much. So people
it's time for hobbies anyway.
Yeah, I know exactly. Because
aside from railing against the Apple TV, what are your hobbies?
Yeah, well, try explaining that one. And which is why I'm absolutely mortified if someone knows about the podcasting stuff or blogging or something on the side. When that comes up, I'm just like, I don't know how to explain this.
I meant to send you this as a Slack DM, but I'll do it publicly just to embarrass myself and potentially another person. Remember how in our last episode, the anniversary episode, you said if you're just tuning in as a joke and say like you want to go back to episode one, don't do that. Like a day later, I got a message from somebody who I haven't talked to in like 15 years, and it was a screenshot of them listening to that episode. And I was like, oh my God, what is happening right now? Please stop. Please stop.
Yeah.
Please stop.
Did they do that because they heard you say that on the anniversary episode?
Nope.
Just randomly.
Just random curiosity.
Yeah. No. Yikes.
Talking about mortifying is like, you know, this is not, I don't know, this probably isn't, you know, the worst version of me that has ever existed, but also it's like that's something that catches you off guard out of the blue. But yeah, I don't really get where do you run into people who mention the podcast just out of nowhere? Like, is it because is it the t-shirt where they go like, what's that, and you have to explain?
That has only happened a couple, like twice at most, and it's always like somebody like a cashier or something, so I'm like not worried about that. You know, like Trader Joe's, they're always like trying to make small talk with you, and it's like I just want to scan my bag of Napa cabbage. Can I leave now? But
once you're like, please, like, talk about the thing that I'm buying instead of me as a person, because I always want to be like, oh, these mangoes, huh? I'm like, sure. But I would much prefer that to them going like, what's all that on your shirt there? Like, don't do that.
Yeah. Well, one time I was wearing the ATP shirt and the guy asked me what it was. I was like, it's a podcast. And he said, oh, is it your podcast? And I said, no. It's somebody else's podcast. And he said, oh, good. It'd be weird if you were doing that. It'd be like being in a band and then wearing your own band t-shirt. And I was like, because I wear my podcast t-shirts all the time. I just wasn't doing it there.
If your band t-shirt had a logo as cool as ours, then you would do it. So take that, Mr. Trader Joe.
Right. Exactly. But you know, you can really solve that problem by not wearing anything with a saying or words on it.
If you're wearing a defocused shirt and somebody said, what is that? And you said, it's a podcast. And he says, yours. And you say, no, just to try and save face. But then he knew who you were. And he was like, but aren't you Joe?
No one would ever do that.
I feel like it's bound to happen at some point. No.
I mean, the odds are probably higher if I was wearing an incomparable t-shirt. But because
then you have to explain what a podcast network is, which is extremely not something you want to do.
No, but if you're saying somebody would recognize me from it, then they would already know that. Yeah.
Maybe they only know you from your writing.
Yeah, right. I mean, I'm sure that's possible. There's probably some, like, you know, blacklist in Cupertino where they've got like a board up and they're like, don't admit this person to the
like Steve Buscemi and Billy Madison, where he's got the list of people to kill.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I don't know. I don't like lay awake worrying about this scenario very often.
It sounds like it's at least bitten you enough times that you've created this covenant of rules to protect you from ever being hurt again.
Yeah. Well, it's not fun. I just don't like being like interrogated about it. Cause then it's just like, if you're some random person, or worse yet, like a family member, God,
yeah.
And it's just like, maybe I'll listen to it. You know, like, send me the link. And it's like, I don't know. I don't want you to do that at all.
I mean, the work stuff is so hard. Cause like, I would be super in like the sometimes there's a thing that I do that I'm into talking about. Like I actually enjoyed a thing. But somebody's like, oh, how's work? And it's like the amount of backstory I would have to give you to even explain like just the topic of the conversation, it would take 30 minutes and then your eyes would glaze over 15 times before we even got to the part that I wanted to like tell you about. So I just don't, I just like sigh and I probably seem like a really grumpy jerk or whatever, but yeah, I just, you can't like, I think I had the moment like right after we did the live talk show thing and my mom was like, what's new with work? And it was like, we did a thing, but I'm not going to tell you about it. Cause like, I'm going to start with, you know, the Apple Vision Pro. And she'd be like, no, what's that? Like, oh, okay. Let's never talk about this ever again.
Oh, you haven't brought it over to show your mom?
No.
Put it in guest mode?
No. I mean, I haven't even let Amanda try it. Like, I mean, I told her like, you should try this. It's cool. She's like, at some point. Apparently it's now 6 months old, I'm told.
Yes. I've been seeing all the think pieces and there was like some YouTuber had a video up about why it's so stagnated or whatever. And it's just like, okay, it seems like the timing's about right for that.
6 whole months.
Yeah. Yeah. I whatever. But, as far as the work thing goes, that is also, a tricky situation because when I was working at Sony, I'd be working on movies that people did not like or had not heard of. And then when I worked at Fuse, I would be working at, with the exception of Speed Racer, for some reason, people would just like, their eyes would light up. They'd be like, oh, I love Speed Racer. I'd be like, why do you love Speed Racer?
It was
like,
on TV all the time when we were kids and we watched it inexplicably because there was the monkey and it was very weird. I mean, I watched a lot of the cartoon. I have no idea why.
Yeah, no, but I'm talking about the movie. I didn't work at the cartoon.
I know, but like, I think people have pent up nostalgia for the property.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know. People like the trippiness of it. They're like, oh, the visuals, whatever, the Wachowskis. And I was just like, ah.
It's awesome if you like drugs.
Yeah, I guess. No, but then there was and, like the one thing that I actually like really liked that I worked on because I like the experience of working on the thing was Watchmen. But no, very few people like the movie. So it's a lot less exciting to have that conversation with people. But then when I was working at Fuse, it'd be on TV shows people mostly weren't watching.
Yeah, but they'd be like, oh, I saw the commercial for that thing.
Well, yeah, sometimes. But I had a very difficult...
That was the run of TV shows where, like, every day I would walk into the bedroom and I'd be like, did Joe work on this one? I'd be like, yeah, probably.
Yeah, well, I mean, there was this whole other thing, too, where it's just explaining to my parents, because they don't... Neither one of them... I mean, they're divorced, first of all, so they're not, like, talking to each other about this. Individually, they're confused. They don't understand, because it's called Fuse FX, is the company. It didn't go anywhere. I went somewhere. It's called Fuse FX, and I was working on an effects show. And so for the longest time, they thought the two were the same thing. And I'd say, no, not at all. It's just a coincidence that I am working on something that also has FX in the name.
Were they telling their friends that you work for FX?
Yes. A couple, because my dad is a CPA, and so sometimes he'd be like, oh, the stock's up for, you know, whatever, and the effects thing, they're talking about that on CNBC, and I'd be like, but that's not, strictly speaking, me in any way.
Pay me a dividend, I'm sorry.
No, yeah, I zero profit.
Was he telling you because he was like, well, you're going to have to claim that extra dividend on your taxes next year?
No, yeah, right. But that conversation... And those conversations are not any fun. But then the new conversation, well, not that new, but the past year, it's been like, yeah, I you know, don't have anything going on, really, because of the state of, you know, Hollywood being torn asunder. And so there's not much to do. With the exception of working on some commercial projects, thank you, I don't have much to talk about. So when people are asking me, like, we had to go to a wedding, and it's just like, what do you do? And it's like, well, I do work in visual effects for TV, but I don't actually work right now, but I do work on a commercial thing every once in a while, but
in between opportunities.
I know, it's like really depressing. They can see the depression, like my whole demeanor shifts, and you can see them wincing and like trying to figure out how they can escape from talking to me. And it's
it doesn't matter. The state of the industry, though, that wincing happens like across the board, like trying to explain your subsection of a subsection of an industry that nobody understands in the first place. This is why it's a running bit here that everyone of Amanda's friends thinks I work in IT because she doesn't really know what I did in the beginning, and I think she said like something in IT. So like I will see somebody that I haven't seen in a while and be like, oh, this person works in IT too, and I'm like, I don't have anything to do with IT. I'm sorry you got that impression at some point, but that has nothing to do with what I, and then they obviously after that want an explanation about what I do, and it's like I can't do, I'm sorry, I can't.
No, Jason, for the love of God, doesn't know what I do. He's just like, you just sit at a computer, and it's like, yeah, but it's different. It's different from what you do.
Do you get the thing, Amanda Watterson, from time to time, she goes, you're still working on that video? And it's like, it's been a week. And yes, we're still working on that video. It takes a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know how it is with Amanda's work stuff that she's done, but with Jason, it's like they just have meetings, but it's always like in and out of meetings and somebody sending something to do a thing. And it's just like... It's this churn of stuff. And then with what I'm doing, like, yeah, like I'll have the same shot up because I'm working on it in and out over the course of a week among the other shots, or it'll be the same as shots. Like I had like a stack of six shots or whatever when we were doing one of the spots, and I was rotating through all of them, and Jason's just like, you're still working on that one? And I'm like, no, there's six of them. They all just look the same. You don't understand. It's called a same as shot, but
this one has a different graph on the screen. Come on.
Yeah. This one is 100 frames. This one's 112 frames. This one's 60 frames. It's a very important special differences between these. Mm-hmm. But anyway.
And then you just get the seams dumb and they walk out of the room.
Yeah, exactly. speaking of people who don't get recognized for their work,
yeah, unsung heroes of the business.
Yes, yes. That gives
us our segue.
Yeah, our segue into talking about The Fall Guy. Is it The Fall Guy or Fall Guy?
It is The Fall Guy. I thought it was just Fall Guy for a very long time, but then the opening title of the movie came on. I was like, huh, there's a The here.
Well, Apple wouldn't like that. But the movie is interesting because it was one of the, I guess, more successful releases of this year in 2024.
Wikipedia says it's it hasn't made its money back yet. It's got a long ways to go.
Yeah, and I mean, the best performing movie of the year has been Inside Out 2, which is surprising in a number of respects, but kudos to them. But The Fall Guy, like, was big at the box. Well, not big at the box office, but it was number one in our very limited post-apocalypse box office for a little bit. And so I had high hopes going into this that people liked it for good reasons, but I guess people were bored because I like the movie, but it's not a very good movie. So
people got bored?
I don't know how to. Yeah, I guess people were bored. They needed to go outside and watch this and say it was good. I don't know. It's not that good. It's just fine. It's a fine movie.
It's fun. I mean, I don't know that it warranted $130 to $150 million budget, but like,
no.
When I saw the trailer, I was excited for it. I was like, oh, that looks cool. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. Love letter to the stunts community. And Gosling and Blunt were at, you know, at the Oscars co-presenting an award or whatever, and, you know, raising awareness for stunts and stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to like it for all of those reasons. And I love Emily Blunt, as we know.
Everybody loves Emily Blunt. If you don't like Emily Blunt, we don't like you.
Yeah, Devil Wears Prada, core to my being. And Ryan Gosling, we all love him. He did Ken. Ken was great. And so there's nothing negative about any of that. It's just the story of this movie is not very good. despite that,
I don't know that it's bad per se. You think it's bad?
No, it's just like it's a mid-tier movie, but it's like scaled up to blockbuster levels.
I mean, blockbuster level movies aren't typically all that deep and interesting anyway, but it's fun.
Yeah, and so it is fun. I think mainly my hang-up is that there is a very predictable story, and that I also don't like the third act, which is a shame because the third act is all about stunts, hurrah. But at the same time, plotting-wise is just bad. Writing.
Did you see all of it coming? I don't know that I saw the big section in the second act coming. But I will give you that the third act is fairly predictable, but in a way that they kind of telegraph that, you know, the happy ending or whatever that they want to have happen.
Oh, yeah, this movie telegraphs everything. And listeners, we're going to get into spoilers. Like I said, I liked the movie. Dan said he liked the movie. So if you want to watch something enjoyable that we are critiquing, go watch it.
If you want to watch a Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt movie that is entertaining and some fun for 2 hours, go watch it because you won't be sad.
Yeah, but just bear in mind, I have like little nitpicks, and we're going to go into those now. But the
so unexpected.
Yeah, with the thing, like the twist in the second act that you're referring to, where he killed the stunt guy, and he, you know, they orchestrated this whole thing. Like that, I knew was coming the whole time. Like Gail obviously flew him out here to frame him for this.
I did not see the framing. I didn't understand why Gail had brought him out there, but I did not think the plan was to pin the bathtub man on him, because we didn't really know what bathtub man was yet.
No. And they mention that Henri was missing, because Emily Blunt asks, where's Henri when he's the one who did the stunt, when he smashes the camera in that first thing. And we don't know who Henri is, but the stunt coordinator guy, he doesn't find out where Henri is or investigate that really. And we don't really have a scene with Gale saying, oh, don't worry about that, he's not with the production anymore or anything like that. That doesn't happen. And so they kind of just leave that name dangling there, so that when they go back later on, they can say, oh, yeah, that was the original stunt guy who was killed, and we're framing him for that.
See, I didn't connect that, because they were talking about how there's a bunch of amateurs out there and it's her big break, and, you know, bring in the big pro to sort of help him out, even though there's some tension there.
Yeah.
It didn't raise any flags for me immediately.
Well, and also the twist in the first act that I think you probably also saw coming, I hope, was that the stunt was rigged to fail. That Ryan Gosling was intentionally injured.
Maybe I was just too open. I don't know that I saw it coming, but it also didn't surprise me.
Oh, Dan, you're so naive.
Yeah, I'm naive. I'm a dumb moviegoer. Like, I didn't predict it, but also it didn't, like, surprise me. Like, oh, the dumb star did something dumb and starish.
No, well, see, but there are things that they do in here where they, like, lay down something that they revisit later that I did really enjoy. One of those is the Miami Vice stunt show thing, because that is part of his jacket, which he has to take off to go to the club, and then he can get it when they go back to that place later, right before the climax of the film. And when he does that, he's wearing that when he gets onto the boat covered in gasoline and he has to go do his thing, and they blow up stuff and he jumps off of the thing, and it ties it in together. You know, Chekhov's Miami stunt show jacket. It's too long for a title, don't write it down.
I wonder if it's in his contract now that he has to have a certain number of very cool jackets in movies. Ever since Drive, I think he's just like, cool jackets gotta be my thing.
I mean, once you see Drive, you're like, all you want to do is put him in a jacket. just have Ryan Gosling show up, and you're just like, oh, sorry, you got to wear this leather jacket. I don't know why. You're in the 16th century, but for some reason we have a motorcycle jacket for you to put on.
Makes him look cooler.
Yeah.
Makes him a star.
Yeah, and, you know, he has... I liked that they made his character confident, and still not too smart, but he's not stupid, and he's not a pushover or anything. Like, he's determined, and is capable of thinking on his feet. And so I think that was a delicate line to walk. And he's also he doesn't learn a lesson about him being a jerk. He learns a lesson about conveying his emotions, which is a much better character arc to root for as the audience. Like, we don't necessarily want to be along for the ride waiting for him to, you know, waiting to find out that he had some, like, dark history or whatever, or dark thoughts, or treats people poorly or something. Like, he's just, like, kind of straight up what you see. He just hides his fear of being emotionally hurt, you know, because he's a skilled tradesman
in a physically demanding but not terribly smart profession.
I
put that in the wrong part. The profession is physically demanding, but he's not terribly smart anyway.
I mean he's smart at his job. He's just, of course, like, we don't expect him to, like, hack phones. Although it was weird that the movie expected the VFX supervisor to hack the phone. Like, when he brought the phone to the karaoke bar, and they brought over the VFX producer, VFX supervisor, and she took one look at it and said, oh, it's a vault, you can't get in, it's going to take forever to crack, and blah, 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 you need to know his password. And then they're like, oh, well, he writes down everything on post-it notes, so we'll go do that. And it was just like, why did we even have that scene? Like,
he had to go get his buddy, and he had to show up to the karaoke thing late.
Yeah, I know, but why do you have the VFX supervisor explain that the phone is like a vault? Like, we all have phones. We know you need to have a passcode. I don't know. I didn't get that part of it. But
maybe there's a deleted scene that explains it.
I don't know. I think they were just trying to give people things to do. Speaking of things,
I meant to click on David Leitch. Mm-hmm. I know that name. He's okay. Atomic Blonde, Bullet Train, John Wick, Fast and Furious, Hobbs and Shaw. Why? I thought it was a different. What am I thinking of? I don't know. Anyway, he's this is his kind of movie for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No. And I don't have an issue with the direction of the movie.
Deadpool 2 is what I was thinking of.
Yeah, it's a different guy.
No, it's him.
Oh, it is?
2 is him.
Oh, okay. Oh, it was Tim something for the first one, right?
Yeah, the blur guy, right?
Yeah. All right, that's who I was thinking of. Anyway.
What was the animal?
The robots fighting the poodle? The poodles fighting? Yeah.
No, it was like a gopher. Gopher. Yeah, it was a gopher short film, remember?
Mm-hmm. Well, they had that one and they had the, I think it was poodles fighting in robot mech suits. Remember when people used to make short films to advertise the services that their company provided and the skill set of their of their workers? Whatever. Going back to the stunt thing, I like that the movie says stunts are important. And I don't think like this is not the kind of movie where you expect a realistic portrayal of stunts. And I don't think that you did either. It's just kind of the usual light, fluffy treatment of how the process works.
Yeah.
Like,
but
when
they
show
the focus of the story, which is very often not the case.
Right. Like, most of the time we're used to writers writing about their profession in this light, fluffy way. I can't imagine why that is. And then we're also used to the same thing with directors, like, and it's always in this light, fluffy way. And here we have a story from a point of view that we don't often get to see. And even though it's not a documentary in any regard, we do get to have a role that is otherwise not highlighted, take center stage, you know, so that's good.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was there anything in particular that you really liked about the movie?
I mean, they got me with all of the most cliche things, right? Like, it's mm-hmm. Ryan Gosling being very Ryan Gosling. You got Emily mm-hmm. Blunt being Emily Blunt. Mm-hmm. Making movies, having fun.
Mm-hmm. They are very charming.
Yeah.
I did think towards the end of the film, I was like, I wish she was not as wrapped up. I wish her character was not as wrapped up in Ryan Gosling as she is, but she doesn't come off as being as independent as I would have enjoyed. Like earlier in the film where she's setting him on fire multiple times, I liked that. I thought that they got back to a stasis of her longing after him pretty quick once he's back in the picture.
Well, they have a long history and he just mm-hmm. had some apologizing to do,
right? Yeah. Did you like Aaron Taylor Johnson?
he's very good at being this character.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being a smarmy, obnoxious star.
Mm-hmm. Very smarmy, very obnoxious. I did enjoy Matthew McConaughey, swagger when he views that character as when he puts on
the
accent
that he's doing when he's being space cowboy or whatever.
Yeah.
that was a lifetime for him standing on top of a car and giving some sort of Braveheart speech about killing aliens.
It was pretty good. I enjoyed that. And I also liked Hannah Waddingham.
How do we miss mentioning that she's here?
Yeah, she's, well, she's in that wig. It just completely disguised her.
the giant glasses and the Diet Coke.
Mm-hmm. I enjoy her. I thought she was a good atypical villain. Mm-hmm. I know you didn't realize she was the villain, but I did earlier in the process of the film. But
I mean,
I still enjoyed
producer,
watching
so she's
her.
She's always a villain, right?
Yeah. I mean, when was the last time you met a producer and were like, this person is not going to stab me in the back of an alley.
This person's got my back. Mm-hmm. Oh, show.
This person won't take a recording and leave on a helicopter at gunpoint.
I think that about all of my producers.
Yes. Yeah. frequent issue. No, but I am a little puzzled by what they were trying to do with Stephanie Sue's character. It felt like that was a little open-ended, and I didn't know if there was more material that was cut for that one.
Because she sort of went from being the assistant to, like, trying to work her way into the biz. And I mean, I assume you saw the post-credit sequence as well.
Yeah, I saw the post-credits. But I wasn't surprised that she tried to work her way up quickly. I was just surprised because she seemed to come into the movie, like, what was it, like 60% of the way through?
Yeah, at least.
Yeah, and so it's just kind of like random out of nowhere, whereas I would have expected her to be the person who greeted him on set or something to like build up some kind of dialogue. Mm. And I was also surprised, speaking of the post-credits and all that, the end of the finale and stuff, Iggy Starr, played by Teresa Palmer, I am unfamiliar with her as an actor, but the Katana scene was funny.
Yes.
But then she's in the tape where the guy dies.
Right.
And then she's still starring in the movie alongside Jason Momoa, who filmed
well, she's not the one who kicked pickups. The stunt guy in the chest.
No, but she's an accessory to a murder.
She's a witness of anything else. She can corroborate it.
But she didn't.
You don't need she to. Didn't there's video evidence.
Okay.
What did you think about them? Something, deepfake? Something light stage, something, something deep fake.
Yeah. Speaking of like the light fluffy treatment of our professions, I feel like that was perhaps a little light, extra light.
I mean, how else do you cliff notes deep? I mean, they said deep fake probably just because people know what that word is and they don't want to say like visual effects. In a bad, I mean, deepfake probably already has a negative connotation, and visual effects doesn't, or at least they don't want it to. So maybe that's why they went with deepfake. But the light stage was interesting, I guess. Like the other reason I didn't see the light stage thing coming. I don't know if you again one of the many things that they telegraphed that you saw coming. The reason I didn't see the light stage thing coming is because all I could think about was like, oh, this is controversial at the moment right here, digitizing the actor to replace them later or to do something else with them.
But it's not that controversial. I mean, I'll take a moment to explain this. Digi doubles for face replacements and stunt performances have gone on for decades.
It's not what I heard they're going to abuse that, and then they're going to take your face and put it everywhere. So okay, so here's mm-hmm. the dumb guy thing that I believed that would really make no sense based on what they were telegraphing. When Aaron Taylor Johnson was going to get arrested and they were going to replace him or something, or you know, or when he died or whatever, I figured they were going to do the reverse face swap and put Ryan Gosling on everything and make him the star of the movie.
I 100% was afraid they were going to do that. Because
that wouldn't make any sense though, because he's not a very like he's not the performer; he's the stunt guy. But like they could have.
That's the thing is like when they talk about it, they when she's doing the scan, she says, you know, the target and the. Whatever she says, the other face, because they can retarget the performance. And I was just like, they're not going to like retarget the performance so that it's going to be him. Cause like, why, how would that even work? Like he would be still talking like Aaron Taylor, like it wouldn't fix anything in the movie.
Well, that's just ADR. I mean, he's dead or he's a bad guy. So you put Ryan Gosling's face and be like, it's Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. Okay. I don't know. I was just like, I was worried they were going to do that, like you were.
I thought they were going to do it, and I was just like, how would they explain that? That's going to be really weird, but then they didn't.
No, they didn't. The most unbelievable part is that they got approval from the studio to reshoot all the scenes with Jason Momoa.
I mean, if your star is literally dead, I mean, what else are you going to do?
Well, I figure one might, you know, decide that they were going to not make the movie at all and claim it as a loss. But
oh, it's a little too inside baseball. You got to release it.
Yeah.
And then win some sympathy, like cover up the murder or something. But no, he came out as a murderer. So the star was a murderer and also he died. So you probably want to like remove him from everything.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess it is a Universal movie. We don't see the studio producing the movie within the movie. If it had been Warner Brothers, then maybe they would have axed it for the tax purposes. But
thing I was thinking was like retargeting. Like, okay, he's dead and gone. Like, are they Are they trying to tell us they retargeted with Jason Momoa? Because I don't buy that because of the hair and then everything else, like the big body or whatever. But like, you know, Christopher Plummer. I guess those were reshoots. They didn't really do it.
Yeah, they at no point did they try to imply that they digitally inserted Jason Momoa. That is definitely reshoots, or at least they were implying reshoots.
I guess it's just weird the juxtaposition of the, you know, facial replacement with stunts, but also the star's gone. I guess we should just reshoot that part.
Yeah.
Which is probably what they would do, but
that's what Stephanie Su's character negotiated that all off screen.
She just wants a producer credit.
Just a little tiny producer credit. And I don't know. Like I said, the third act kind of like all kind of it makes a mess. But the other stuff is pretty funny. I like the dog.
The dog is very funny. I expected to dislike the dog, but the dog played a good role.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Jean-Claude was a good name for a dog. And also, I liked the I was worried that he was going to wear thin, that I wasn't going to be interested in seeing the dog because he was sticking around. Whereas, you know, I would have expected him to only be used in that first dump truck scene where they do that dump truck chase through Sydney. But afterwards, when they decide that they're just Turner and Hooch now, that's a little strange. But I don't get sick of the dog, even though he only has one trick of biting the balls.
It's a good trick, though, still, if you're going to be a dog.
Yeah, it's a good trick. I mean, how many dogs do you know that are trained to bite people's balls?
I mean, only a very couple, funny. But not enough, basically.
Is PD trained?
No. PD knows how to do nothing except sit for a treat.
You got to get him Duolingo. Get him up on his French.
He's too old to learn new tricks, as they say.
Alonzi PD. What did you think of the relationship, his friendship with the stunt coordinator, that part of it? Winston Duke.
I thought it was fun. It's cool that he had a friend. Like, it seemed like, I don't know how much they were trying to communicate with, like, the realism of this kind of thing, but, like, it's definitely a thing that happens in the industry, is, like, you make friends that you see from show to show, and you kind of maintain those friendships over long periods of time, but you see each other, and you're kind of, like, palling around still again. So it was cool, like, they had each other's back, like, especially if you're in such a dangerous part of filmmaking as, like, stunts. Like, you gotta trust people. So I liked the friendship. I thought it was cool. The jokiness where they were, like, guessing movie lines and stuff, talking about Rambo or whatever. Like, it was fun. I enjoyed it. Neither of them seemed particularly sidekicky. They seemed like friends.
Yeah.
Am I wrong? Did I not see that coming, too? Is he part of the plan?
No. The only thing that I didn't love was at the end where he has his, like, rallying cry for, like, all of the
stunt crew rise up.
Yeah, that was a little over the top. But I liked them, like, when they're in the apartment fighting, and when they're trying to break into the phone and going through all the post-it notes and stuff. Like, that's good stuff.
Maybe it was a reference to one of the battle scenes from Black Panther. Probably not.
No. What did you think of the production design, by the way? This is a particularly jazzy movie.
Jazzy? What do you mean jazzy?
Yeah. Well, I mean, we have a lot of black light, strangely.
Sure. I mean, the neon outfit was very cool. I don't know if it's quite going to make Halloween costume status the way Drive Jacket did.
Right. Well,
it felt very Justin Bieber. It felt very Justin Bieber, but it was cool. I don't know that the fellow with the leopard tattoos on his head is going to be a trend for the Gen Zers or whatever, but it was cool. Like the gold shiny outfits for Space Cowboy or whatever. Extremely not a movie I would want to watch, but it was interesting to see all of the, you know, the big tall alien people and a space High Noon at the Edge of the Universe or whatever.
Yeah. I have some questions about how that all works, but, you know, we're not supposed to know, so it's fine.
I mean, mostly, like, the entertainment value for me just came from the... I mean, there's obviously a lot of style in the visuals, too, but, like, the style of all of the stunts that they're putting on screen, too. Like, the whole garbage truck scene, I think at one point when it turned sideways and started spinning, I was like, all right, we're just showing off now, which is cool. Like, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stunt movie, but... they did a lot of cool stunts, and that was fun to watch.
Yeah, yeah. And which I'm sure is most of the budget.
And I bet Ryan Gosling did all of those himself, even though he had a team of four other people with him.
No, I mean, you see in the post in the credits, they show you all the stunt guys.
I don't know, the facial replacement was just a fake thing for the story of this movie.
Yeah. Not to break the magic for everyone out there, but digi doubles are a thing. Sometimes they don't even use a stunt actor; they'll just have a straight up digital copy of the actor.
Yeah, there's that one shot. I think it was on the bridge where it's like a helicopter shot looking down through the bridge, and he's being pulled behind the truck with like sparks shooting out, and like this is, none of that's down there. Like, that's definitely not a person of any sort, but it was fine. It looked good. I guess of his outfits, though, that might make a Halloween costume. I like that they put him in the what do you call the vest full of straps where you connect wires to it for a stunt guy. That was very much like, hello, I am stuntman. I have the tight vest with all of the straps.
Seems, I don't know if there's a technical name for that, but
it's gotta be a fun name for that thing.
Yeah.
I should ask ChatGPT.
They also did a surprising number of, like car wrecks for a space movie. So that was cool, I guess.
Oh, they, apparently the record of the rolls was real. The car rolls.
Oh, this earned a record.
Yeah. Remember they were talking about it, like, was it in the movie or was it in the post credit scene where they said, like, that was a record? You did a 8.5 cannon car roll or whatever. Like, that's actually a record, according to Wikipedia. I don't know. Maybe it's lying to me. I feel like there've been a lot of car rolls, but that one in particular, maybe it's the person driving it version.
Yeah.
I don't know. Bad sand.
Yeah.
Just postpone.
He tried to warn them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The hallucinogenic scene was also very cool. Like, I like the way they stylize that up with the sort of like diamonds and stuff bouncing around off of people.
It was very Scott Pilgrim.
Yeah.
As we've discussed before, I've not done any hallucinogenic kind of thing of any kind. And so just whenever I see it depicted in a movie, I'm like, it's interesting that it's always depicted differently. And I can't tell if any of this, even though it's done with conviction, is accurate to any experience. I did enjoy the unicorn. That was a nice touch because it did communicate to the audience without like they didn't do the thing where they made the vision all like wobbly for the whole rest of the time. Cause that would have been a very difficult movie to watch. They just had the horse hanging out in the shot in the background.
No, that was a very funny sequence where, because like he's a stunt guy, and to stop the cab with the drug dealer running away, he just literally walks out. He puts in his mouth guard and walks out and stands in front of the car and gets hit by the car. But then when he's shouting at him, like, how long does this last? He's like, when you stop seeing animals,
unicorns
are good. And then he just kind of like turns to the side and there's a unicorn on the road. And he's just like, I guess not yet.
He goes to the hotel check-in desk and there's a unicorn behind him. And then the unicorn steps out of the way because of an animal handler, of course. And then it reveals Emily Blunt, who walks up to the desk. And that was a nice touch of making that part of the storytelling, as well as when he goes up to the hotel room and they do the split screen, which is a conversation about how cheesy split screens are.
Yeah, but it was like really artfully done, too. Like, I liked when they walked in and out of the frames. Left one person standing there, it sort of directed your eye and, you know, the different movements. It was a pretty good split screen.
Yeah, no, I feel like split screens get a bad rep because they're often not done with any kind of thoughtfulness to them.
Yeah. Like if this was the mid 90s where they were all like, did you hear about the new Nicolas Cage movie that has an 8-minute oneer in it? It's supposed to be really cool. Like this is the kind of thing that people would tout in a different era.
Yeah, I mean, I do like you were saying with the movement, like they synchronize them crossing their legs and stuff when they're sitting down and all those things. It's done really well. They're like mirror images. And then when the conversation ends her split screen slides off to the, wipes off to the left and reveals that the unicorn is still there behind where the split screen was.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's just, that's really good. I enjoy that. I feel like that is an artful touch. And which one of those reasons why I was saying this movie, you know, is more expensive than the mid-tier thing it really ought to be, is because they're obviously spending the money. I'm not accusing them of like wasting their cash. It just is they're spending it on this.
They filled every bit of the frame and every piece of the story with like fun little extra bits and bobs that are entertaining. It doesn't feel like they put a dozen hats on top of the other hats, but like it could have been scaled way down and still been the same movie. It just wouldn't have been as fun.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. So that's why I had this conflicted thing of, I like the movie. It's just like, I don't love the movie. And so it kind of,
I mean, you're not going to stand up and say like, this is a great movie that deserves an Oscar for best original screenplay or something. But, you know, I'm old and boring and tired and I like fun things. So like, this is a fun movie to watch.
Yeah. I mean, I would consider this to be more of a, you're on an airplane movie, perhaps. Maybe part of my saltiness is also because the two options I had to watch this were to rent it for $19.99 or to buy it for $24.99.
Yeah. Which option did you choose?
I was like, I have been burned by renting things in the past that I ended up liking. And if it's only $5 more, I might as well just own it. Also, there's the possibility that we might not have been able to record tonight for one reason or another, and then I would have the ability to watch it again without wasting 20 more bucks. And so I was like, fine, I'll just spend the $5. And so now I own a movie that's just okay. But I own it forever.
Are you one of these people that like deletes every non-5-star song out of your iTunes library too?
No. But see, that's the thing is like, I don't want to remove anything because I have it. I want to keep it. Yeah. I mean, I removed the YouTube album out of spite. But because you know, you could do the uncheck thing on the website. I was one of the people who did that. Tim Cook.
I don't think I did that. I think it's still on my thing.
Yeah. But I believe in like the sanctity. I want to like curate a collection that says something about me at the end of the day. And it really does not. What I've got inside that iTunes library.
You think like when you die and somebody is going through all your stuff, they're going to see the Fall Guy in your Apple TV library. They're going to be like, do I not even know Joe? Like, do I have a misunderstanding of who he was as a person because he bought the Fall Guy?
No, I don't. It's not that level of embarrassment. I don't care if after I'm dead someone sees it. I care when I'm alive that I see it. Does that make sense?
No. Can't you just like hide it or something? Isn't there a hide button? It's a movie.
I don't know. I mean, you
it's
can.
It's a square on a screen.
I know, but it just is one of those things where it's just like, I spent $25. Every time I see it, I'm going to say, I spent $25 on this.
The way I justify it, if it helps you at all, if we lived in a different time and you had to go see this in a theater, you would have spent $25 and only been able to see it once. So now you have the ability to watch it again.
Time out. Making the T sign with my hand right now. what era was it $25 to see a movie?
I don't know. I haven't been to a movie theater in years. I assume it's $25 now.
No, Dan.
Was it $12, $14?
It can run you like $18.
That's a theater versus now you're at home and you own a movie, you can watch it again.
And that's why the rental window price is so high, is because it gives you that trade-off of you could see it in a movie theater or you could see it at home for basically the same amount of money. Also, I'm not one of those people who's like, I'm going to buy a bucket of popcorn and 3 hot dogs and,
popcorn.
5 fountain drinks and a cherry icy and everything.
Have popcorn and a cherry icy and maybe some Junior Mints, my friend.
Oh, no Junior Mints. I don't like snacking because also we've discussed this in the past before, but I'll reiterate it again. I can't have a drink with me in the movie theater. I will just keep drinking the drink until it's gone, and then I need to go to the bathroom immediately.
Well, you got an empty cup with you, don't you?
No, Dan, that's not how that works.
I mean, ask Merlin.
Maybe if I had the Wolverine popcorn bucket. But
what about the Dune one?
No, thank you. So anyway, the yeah, I'm not concerned about being out of money for going to a movie theater. I just, you know, makes me sad.
I don't regret purchasing this movie. I may never watch it again, but I don't regret purchasing it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Is like, I may never watch it again either. So it's just going to be there, floating around.
I guess you better watch it again.
Thing. Yeah, I guess. Maybe I'll like it more the next time I watch it and I forget how much it cost. But the...
how much it costs? Like you bought some sort of special edition gold-plated $100 movie or something.
I mean, I've wasted money on stupider things than this, but for some reason, it's just like, I don't know. I guess maybe because people overhyped it or something. Like, I just was expecting more out of it. Does that make sense?
I guess. I don't know that I was expecting more. I was expecting about where we landed.
Okay.
Also, looking at the writer, Drew Pierce, this makes a lot of sense. He's the writer of Iron Man 3. This feels Iron Man 3 to me.
Yeah, this is that level of quality. I also don't love Iron Man 3. I wouldn't want to own that one.
Not a bad movie. Entertaining. Not perfect. We got some of our best Tony Stark in Iron Man 3, whether or not the movie is fantastic. Have we talked about that movie? We probably haven't, right?
No, we haven't. We didn't. I don't think we've done. I don't think we've done the Iron Man movies. We did the Avengers movie and Ultron, famously.
That was Casper Mango, right?
Yeah, and we.
I remember things.
Yeah, and we said no more of this because we hated Joss Whedon's Age of Ultron so much. Also, they just released too many movies. Too many.
There were a lot.
Way too many.
Yeah, and see, the thing is, I would talk about Iron Man 3, but I don't want to have to do. I mean, Iron Man 1's a good movie, but I don't really want to have to talk about it. Iron Man 2. I don't know if I want to talk about Iron Man 2 in order to get to Iron Man 3.
No,
see, that's just be an hour and a half of us talking about what is Mickey Rourke doing here.
Yeah, and like, why are we doing Sam Rockwell as Jim Carrey in Batman Forever?
I mean, I like Sam Rockwell, but Sir Ben Kingsley in Iron Man 3 is something to behold.
Yeah. Someone kind of spoiled what that was before I saw the movie, so I was a little sad.
See, I will never forget the way he says green screen in that movie, and it makes me laugh just thinking about it. But anyway, blah, 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 exactly. This is a fair comparison for people who don't know if they want to see The Fall Guy. Did you like Iron Man 3 at all? If you did, then you might enjoy The Fall Guy.
I don't know. I mean, it's better. I think
Iron Man 3 has a 7.1 next to this yellow star on IMDb, and The Fall Guy has a 7.0 next to its yellow star. So very similar.
I would say a word of warning. You can't trust the kind of people who vote for Iron Man movies, especially those MCU fans are a little rabid.
Well, he also wrote Mission Impossible Rogue Nation, but I couldn't tell you which one was Rogue Nation.
that was the one with he kills the guy in the record store at the beginning of the movie. That one, I don't love that.
What is Hotel Artemis? I don't remember this ever occurring.
Wasn't that this
Jodie Foster, Jeff Goldblum, Dave Bautista? What is this?
I think it was supposed to be like wasn't it supposed to be like the hotel from John Wick, but it wasn't?
Oh, maybe. It's got Sophia Boutella in it too. Set in riot-torn near-future Los Angeles, Hotel Artemis follows the nurse who runs a secret members-only emergency room for criminals. That sounds John Wickish.
Mm-hmm. Wick adjacent.
Wick adjacent. Brian Tyree Henry. Was Quinto in here? Can I try? This is a good cast in this.
Do you want to watch it, Dan?
It's an hour 34, and it's got 6.1 yellow stars. Written and directed by Drew Pierce. Interesting. Interesting.
I wonder if that's why that is a slightly lower rating.
Who could say? Sterling K. Brown. Charlie Day. Okay.
Where Charlie Day was just appearing in things. Like,
yeah.
When he's in Pacific, whatever, the stupid robot movie.
Pacific Rim.
With the kaiju.
I thought you were going to say there was an era where they were just making weird movies like this. Like, this feels very... I have no reason to suspect this because I haven't seen that movie either. But this feels very like Bullet Train-ish, which I think is also a Leech movie.
No. I saw Bullet Train.
That's the Brad Pitt one, right?
Yeah. Don't know. It's tough for me to compare these two, but I'd say they're of an equally light demeanor.
Bullet Train, 7.3 yellow stars.
Uh-huh.
Leech also did Atomic Blonde, which apparently only has a 6.7 yellow stars.
Yeah, but we know Anthony Johnston, who wrote the script for the comic book. Yeah. Is it called a script? I don't know. He wrote the words, but not the drawings for the thing.
Anywho. It's interesting that, I mean, they didn't really explicitly call out or hide visual effects. Like, I think obviously they wanted to focus on the stunts here, but like all the wire work, like, I think it's fair to assume that the audience watching would go like, yeah, those wires got to go away somehow, right? Like, that's visual effects. Do you think they properly respected us in this movie?
I think I didn't love the character of Venti, because, well,
I totally
all,
missed that she was a visual effects supervisor. I missed that entirely.
How? She's the one who is always lobbying to replace everything with VFX, and that's the part that I didn't like. Because,
oh, I thought that was just her as a producer saying like it's cheaper to do in visual effects.
No, she always wants to replace everything with visual effects in the movie for reasons that are weird. Because if you know a real visual effects supervisor, they're not lobbying to replace anything. But they're saying, if we do this with visual effects, we do it this way. Because it's obviously going to be work, but it's not always the same thing. Like, there's always trade-offs. And, like, part of it being real on set is significant to
so
how you talk about
it,
that kind of stuff.
Of it primarily being a financial thing is not ideal.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I didn't love that. I did like when they kept cutting back and forth between the, like, I guess, finished movie within the movie and what they were shooting. Mm-hmm. Because I thought that really conveyed the scale of all of the stuff that gets added to make the stuff that's practical.
Like the ships and stuff
work
behind him or whatever.
Yeah, and like the armies. Like, there was none of that there. Like, you see a very different thing, and so it made the sets feel less goofy than if you just showed those sets, even though those sets are close to what's real, to see the scope of what the final product is, because most people can't keep the two things in their mind, because they don't, like, if this was a movie about the behind the scenes on Iron Man 3 or something, like, people could piece together the stuff. Like, or we remember the Iron Man 2 thing where they're the two guys, what are their faces, they're standing in their little motion capture suits,
pajamas.
Yeah, and like that famously is always on making the rounds on the, you know, movies without VFX things.
Yeah.
And like to do that kind of situation here, like, you see like the aliens that have the bent backwards legs where it's the guys on stilts, right? They showed the guys like stilt feet hanging there in the air, so that makes it makes like, you, if you knew what you were looking for, you'd notice that. I don't think the audience knows that. But I think the audience can piece together, this is what the finished product is supposed to be.
Yeah, there's another layer,
and this is what they're doing.
This is not the end result.
Right.
It's fair. It's fair critique, I would say, because, I mean, a lot of times on set, the visual effects supervisor is literally doing the opposite, saying, please, I'm begging you, can we just put something in the frame? Like, even if it's not perfect, just put something there.
Mm-hmm.
Versus saying, no, don't even worry about the car. We'll just do the car later. That's not really how it goes. It is really a conversation about, you know, what is the best version of each piece of the thing to get to the end result? And I can't believe I missed that that's who that character was. I thought it was just a producer person. But if that is the case, then yeah, that's a little annoying that she was just kept going like, it's cheaper to do NVFX. Let's just do that.
Yeah.
How dare they, basically.
I don't know. I mean, I hate to end it on such a downer of me being like,
it was an entertaining movie. Yeah. Go watch the entertaining movie.
Yeah. It's got fun stuff in it.
Oh, I know how to end this. Like, did you know this was quote unquote loosely based on a TV series from the 80s?
No. Where did that come from?
Because in the, was it the post credits there where they do the very dramatic reveal of the bounty hunters? And I was like, that guy is clearly somebody because they just really focused on him taking his mask off. And that was Lee Majors. Apparently he starred in a TV series called The Fall Guy in the mid 80s. Which is described as stunt performers who moonlight as bounty hunters. I had no idea.
None. I mean, I did when I saw Lee Majors, I didn't recognize him immediately, but no. I was like, he seems slightly familiar. I saw that show.
I'm like, that's the $6 million man, right? Like, I didn't really realize it, but like, well, what are we doing right now? Why are you here in this particular moment?
Well, and in the movie, they also use the sound effect from $6 million. The that sound.
Did I miss that? Where was that?
Yeah, in I think the apartment fight, they used it. Maybe.
Oh, that sounds right. Oh, apparently his Lee Majors' character was also called Colt Seavers. How about that? He uses his physical skills and knowledge of stunt effects, particularly those involving cars or his large GMC pickup truck, to capture fugitives and criminals. He is accompanied by his cousin and stuntman in training, Howie Munson, and occasionally by fellow stuntwoman Jody Banks, who I think is also in the cameo in the movie.
Did I miss? I was wondering why he had a GMC truck in this, but I also was wondering why he has a American style left hand drive. GMC truck instead of an Australian right-hand drive one.
I assume it's because the audience is American, and the fellow that gave him the truck said, "Be careful with this. It's product placement or whatever."
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's probably why then.
Yeah. But then he went on to say, you know, you stunt guys destroy everything that I hold dear or whatever. It was a very weird line that he delivered. Felt like a reference to something else too that I didn't understand. Anyway.
Oh well. So yeah.
That's the Fall Guy, I guess, huh?
Yeah. And you get it, it's a play on words.
Yeah, because he falls because he's a stuntman. Mm-hmm. Also, Fall Guy, slang for dude who's gonna take the rap for somebody else's crime.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting if that is the name of a TV series from the 80s. Like, what was the double entendre there?
No idea.
Yeah, doesn't really make any sense. How many episodes did they do with this? 82 to 85. So it got a few seasons.
Wow, yeah.
Oh, wait, no. 81 to 86. That was just a particular actor. Wow.
Oh, that's a hefty run.
Yeah.
Huh. Must have been pretty formative for our 23 director
episode
and writer.
Seasons. Five seasons, 23 episodes. Well, two of them are 22, but that's a lot of stuntmen bounty hunters. I feel like I need to watch an episode of this now. It's going to be terrible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Pull up Dailymotion, see if you can find it.
Watch a 240p clip of it.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy, 1981, Lee Majors. God, he looked old here already.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he'd been acting for a long time. Before you hit play on that, let's end the podcast.
I'm not going to hit play anything. I'm just not looking at IMDb.
Okay. Well, before you stare at the screen, let's end. Let's end the podcast for the people.
Okay.
Yeah.
Bye.
Goodbye.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members